The winter meetings are done, and the Rangers roster seems to be mostly in place. Let's recap all that happened and where the Rangers stand now. All that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are locked on to the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Patrick, a cripplingly addicted Texas Rangers fan since 2010, the founder and host for all four seasons of this Locked On Rangers podcast. Thank you all so much for making Locked On Rangers your first listen every single day. If you're not already, you can follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick. You can follow the show at Locked On Rangers and subscribe on YouTube, where the best way you can help grow the show is to comment any single thing below. Jacob deGrom had his introductory press conference today. We're going to get into all the things that he said, all the questions that were asked. But first, today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. So, Jacob deGrom, officially Texas Ranger, looks fantastic in his uniform. Just such an honestly fantastic moment seeing him up there, but Jacob deGrom isn't the only new Ranger. Andrew Heaney is also part of this Rangers rotation. They officially, job done, got their two starting pitchers. I do think this means they're probably done with their starting rotation, but I honestly wouldn't rule out a trade with this team for a top-end starting pitcher if there is one to be made, whether it is for one of those two studs at the top of the Milwaukee Brewers rotation, or if it's maybe for a Shane Bieber, or even for maybe even a Pablo Lopez. I think the Lopez deal is less likely now because they have the depth that they want, the depth they did not have last year that I still thought they should have signed another starting pitcher going into that season, and maybe the Rangers wouldn't have finished with 95-ish, 96, 90, some amount of losses that was too many. 94 losses last year, which was far too many, but the Rangers aren't done making their team. This is still not a complete roster. I think for the most part, if they went into this season with this roster, I think it's still good enough to scrap for one of those bottom of the wild card spots, one of those final spots, and it doesn't really matter which one of the spots you get as long as you get in. I think that's really the most important thing. Obviously, I think the Rangers would like to be one of the top wild card spots so that they, you know, would be playing at home for that three-game series as opposed to playing all three games on the road, but I don't think they particularly care. As long as they break that streak, have a winning record, I think this team is good enough to do it. Now, where are their upgrades left to be made? I think they could add another guy at the top end, at the back end of the bullpen, particularly. I don't think they necessarily need to. I think the bullpen got a lot of unnecessarily flack last year, and because the starting pitching was so bad, it put a much, much bigger strain on the bullpen. They didn't get their two best bullpen arms back until around the middle of the season in Jose Leclerc and Jonathan Hernandez. Both those guys were fantastic once they were there, and I think they've basically got their guys. They've got Brock Burke back there. I don't know if they're going to bring back Matt Moore. I still am really annoyed that they didn't trade him at midseason at the peak of his value, but maybe those 74 innings that he ended up putting in, 30, maybe 30 something of them were after the trade deadline. I think they could have been filled with somebody else and, well, still been a losing team and it wouldn't have really mattered that much. But maybe the market just wasn't there. They weren't going to get anything anyway. That's fine. But I do think left field is probably the biggest place that the Rangers could upgrade at the moment. This is not to deride Bubba Thompson, but I do think he could end up being maybe a starting everyday player. But I think at the moment, he's just not quite there offensively. He is still a little bit young, 24 years old. And offensively, he was mostly providing on-base speed, a little bit of defense, not a great arm defensively in left field. But I still do think that he can be a pretty helpful contributor with his speed just being absolutely game-changing, and that alone. I do think he's pretty solid defensively in left field, but I think the speed being the fastest player in all of baseball, which I think he was last year, if it wasn't him, it was Eli White, I think that really merits him getting a spot on the roster, but it doesn't provide a whole lot of value offensively in left field. The Rangers have not gotten a whole lot out of left field offensively in years and years and years since really since Willie Calhoun had that great 2018 season, the Rangers have not had a lot of production offensively or just really at all in left field. It's been a little bit of Nick Solak. It's been a little bit of Bubba Thompson. It's been a little bit of this, that, and the other, and just not a whole lot of production coming out of there really at all, which has been very, very frustrating. That's usually a position where you can send guys who don't have a whole lot of defensive skills and can mash like heck. And the Rangers haven't really had that in left field. And I think there are some options on the market if they wanted to go the wink wink Joey Gallo route, which I have been pushing and I think makes a lot of sense. And the Rangers should just hurry up and do it already. I wish they would have done it at the winter meetings, or maybe they'll end up doing it tomorrow when I'm working and can't record a podcast during it, because that has been more their speed. But, you know, it's fine. I think there's still plenty of left field options to get out there. I don't know if Nimmo is the most likely option. Definitely a possibility. There is still some room before they start pushing up against that luxury tax. It's kind of jumping up quickly when you add $30 million of Jacob deGrom and $12.5 million of Andrew Heaney. It tends to add up pretty quick. By the way, the Andrew Heaney contract, when I talked about it on Tuesday or whatever day that was, he does have an opt-out after his first year. There are a lot of incentives. It is a baseline two-year $25 million deal that I could believe could be worth up to $37 million. There's a lot of restrictions on that second year, but basically the thing is, if he shoves this year, if he's really good and he's healthy, I think that is what will unlock the opt-out in his contract and make him a free agent again at the end of this year. But it does seem like with him signing that, you know, 1+1 essentially deal, and Martin Perez signing the 1-year qualifying offer, it seems like the Rangers are really making that bridge to the guys they have coming up. They have a lot of faith in basically those top three guys that are, I believe, the closest, who haven't made their debut, in Cole Winn, in Jack Leiter, and Owen White. Those guys, 2024 is kind of the target for those guys. I think that's a realistic target. Some of them might get up there a little bit before. We'll see what happens with Cole Winn this offseason. Really, really rough year for him this past year. But if he can iron out those control and command issues that really plagued him this season, then I think he can be a more than solid number three, number four, number five starter. Owen White's got as high an upside as pretty much any pitcher in the entire Rangers organization. And Jack Leiter also has insanely high upside. Rough first year, but I think he will definitely iron that out. Coming up, we're going to get into some of the comments from Jacob deGrom at his press conference, including a weird one about his injury, a peculiar one, I should say, about his injury from this season. But first, this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Can we pause the pod for a second? Okay, we're paused. Great, because you have got to try this. I am talking about Built Bar's new reimagined flavors: cookie dough topper, coconut brownie bar, coconut brownie topper, white chocolate peppermint and granola. It's Built's take on the granola bar. It's more filling and insanely tasty. And candy bar brownie, Built Bar puffs are just absolutely delicious. They are just doing it. They are just going for it. It is absolutely fantastic. All of these Built bars are going to be the best tasting protein bars you have ever had. I am not kidding. There will be a time before you try these new Built Bar flavors, and a time after, it will change your life forever. And the magical, wonderful time afterwards, you'll probably be wondering which flavor is my favorite. You know, an answerable question, to say the least. You know, they're all unbelievable. They're all different. So you can order a mixed box, try all five flavors for yourself. Built, you've got to try this. Get 15% off your order right now by using the code LOCKEDON15 at Built.com. Now, Jacob deGrom's press conference was, you know, press conferences are usually pretty boring. This one was exciting in that we got to see Jacob deGrom in a Rangers uniform for the first time. They chose the traditional home uniforms, the white with the blue cap. That's a good look. That's probably a safe bet, honestly, that's what the opening day jersey is going to be. I would have loved to have seen him in the powder blue. That would have been fantastic. He has never worn, I don't believe, a powder blue uniform, because I don't think the Mets have them. Or you show him in that red uniform, but not really a bad option. The Rangers have a lot of really, really good uniform choices. But that's not the most important thing that he talked about. A few of the things that he credited for the Rangers, you know, selling him on their vision, that was a big, big thing that a lot of these guys have brought up and is in Bruce Bochy, in, you know, the free agent signing from last year, Marcus Semien and Corey Seager, and just a lot of different guys who Chris Young has been an incredibly good salesman so far early in his GM tenure. And I think that is probably his best quality as a GM, is being able to sell these guys and anybody really on his vision. I mean, you look at what the way the Rangers last two off seasons have gone. And at this point, I don't think you could ask for any better. Coming off a historically horrible 2021 season, the Rangers were giddy at the prospect of throwing a crap ton of money around in the winter of 2021, which nobody really saw coming outside of themselves. And, you know, credit to them, they talked big game and they followed through. And you know what? It didn't quite work out in 2022. It wasn't the greatest regular season. I do still think that they are better than the record showed, and I think the Rangers do too. But they made some big moves. They fired their skipper. They fired John Daniels. They come in, and you know, before the season is really over, before the World Series, they hire Bruce Bochy, who, if you're looking for a manager to kick off 2023, a year where they have self-defined that this is the year we break the playoff drought. This is the year we start winning. It's happening in 2023, and we are all about it. That is as good a hire as you can ask for. They did, you know, they made some interesting choices in the draft this year. They drafted Kumar Rocker and Brock Porter, two first round talents, and they were able to do that by, you know, picking Rocker, a surprising pick, and we'll see if that works out. They end up looking very, very smart. They made a interesting decision to, you know, take two bites of the apple, but that year was supposed to be the last year that they picked highly in the draft and had a lot of draft slot money to throw around. This year, they went into the winter meetings, and by the way, they'll be picking fourth, even though they finished with the seventh worst record because of that new draft lottery. So they'll have one more bite of the apple at a high pick with a lot of draft money to throw around. We'll see what kind of decisions that makes they make with that next summer. But the Rangers have been really, really good at selling that vision, and they were able to show these guys, get them to buy in, say, all right, I believe in this team, you know, even though they're coming off these two really rocky seasons, I believe that this is a team that is serious when they say they're going to win a World Series. They want to win a World Series, and they are going to do whatever it takes. Spending this amount of money and bringing in these guys is a sure sign, but it's still a difficult sell for a team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2016. But DeGrom was sold. The Rangers were sold on him and giving him 5 years, and that was a great thing. DeGrom also talked about how Bochy being in charge, being the manager, was a factor in him signing here, as was the Rangers spending on Marcus Semien and Corey Seager last year, which, again, duh. Like, why wouldn't it be a factor? Because if they didn't sign those guys, the Rangers probably would have been the 102 lost team again this year. And it would have been very, very difficult to convince Jacob deGrom to come and sign with that team. Like it was difficult for them to convince the other two guys to come sign with this team. But you had to start somewhere, and the Rangers had those building blocks. Another thing that deGrom credited was the constant communication and the clearly articulating of their vision. Loved the stadium. Seemed really, really genuinely thrilled to be here. It seemed like he wasn't 100% sure about leaving the Mets. Obviously, it's a tough decision to leave a team where he had had so much success, who, for the most part, had treated him okay. But it seemed like Texas just wanted him more. And I think that is what ended up making the difference. From the crossover I did with Ryan Finkelstein, host of Locked On Mets, that was up yesterday, he kind of talked about the Mets being fine with this because it seemed like Cohen really just wanted Verlander from the start. He wasn't, you know, all that thrilled and enthused with Jacob deGrom, which I don't know how you aren't. Doesn't really make sense to me. He's clearly been the best pitcher in baseball when he's been healthy for the last 8-9 seasons. So I don't really get what that kind of whole deal was. But hey, thanks. Thanks for not being enthused with the best pitcher in baseball. Thank you for letting him leave, because the Rangers very, very much are happy to have him. Now, let's get into the most important comment I thought that he had in this press conference. He mentioned it twice. He called the injury that he sustained last year a weird injury. He said the stress reaction in his right scapula, that's the injury that he suffered last year that caused him to miss the first 4 months of the season. He said that was a weird injury. Said it twice. But all respect to Jacob deGrom, I have to disagree. That's not a weird injury. That's a pretty normal injury. From what I understand, he kind of noticed it in spring training when he was throwing. He's like, all right, something's feeling wrong with my shoulder. Let's go get a scan. And they saw, all right, that's a stress reaction. That's a pretty normal baseball injury. I mean, stress reaction is a little more rare. But in terms of weird injuries, baseball has a high bar for what's considered a weird baseball injury, just let alone on the Rangers in the last 10 years. I'll tell you what's a weird injury. Craig Gentry high-fiving Jeff Bager so hard he broke his thumb. That's a weird injury. Derek Holland tripping over his dogs while going down the stairs. That's a weird injury. I know it was while he was actually like playing hockey, I think was the actual story. But I'm going with that because that was the initial cover story that we were given. Jerickson Profar suffering a career-altering shoulder injury while he was sleeping. That's a weird injury. Maybe it wasn't while he was sleeping. Maybe it was something else. But I don't want to speculate because that was what we were told. So that's a weird injury. But the weirdest injury of all was not any of those. Those were pretty weird. They're definitely up there, especially if they are what they say they were. But the weirdest one the Rangers have had, you might have forgot about it because I almost did. But Martin Perez was injured by a bull on his ranch in December of 2017 when he was still in his first stint with the Rangers. Yeah. He was injured, he fell, he hurt his non-throwing elbow when a bull charged at him, and to get his revenge, he killed and ate that bull. Quote, no more bull, he said to reporters a little bit later. Ended up being healthy and fine for the regular season, but that might be one of the weirder baseball injuries for sure. I thought that Rougned Odor had some injury while he was riding his horses. I don't think that was the case. I couldn't find anything on that. I do remember him getting two horses in his contract extension, which is one of the more delightful and fun contract extension notes that I've seen in professional sports. Honestly, there have not been a whole lot of contracts that have those weird kind of things in there, at least with the Rangers. That was one of the more fun ones. I would like to see some other random things, some random like animals that Jacob deGrom could ask for. I think maybe Martin Perez is going to ask for that in his next contract because he has a ranch at his home in Venezuela, which again was where this bull injury happened. Maybe they could get him an animal that doesn't try to injure him. But all respect to Jacob deGrom, but a stress reaction in your right scapula, that's not a weird baseball injury. But I do think it's an interesting one because, as I've gone over many, many times when talking about Jacob deGrom, for the most part, outside of these last two seasons, but you know, recency bias is a hell of a drug. He's been healthy. He had a bicep injury in 2016, I believe it was. But other than that, he's been one of the healthier pitchers in all of baseball. Now, what do these last two seasons have in common? It was his age 32 and age 33 season, so he's not old, not young, kind of, you know, towards the older-ish side, but why would he have them specifically in these last 2 years, other than it just, you know, random natural injury history? I think there's a different reason, and it's not some mad conspiracy theory, so just put your tinfoil hats away. But look at the lead-up to the last two seasons. In 2020, there was a pandemic-shortened season where he pitched 64-ish innings, a normal workload towards the higher end of the innings count in that 60-game season. Finished third in Cy Young voting, could have won depending on how voters were feeling, but he was coming off back-to-back Cy Youngs, and winning a third, he probably would have had to been overwhelmingly better than everybody else to win that third straight. But anyway, all that to say, remember 2021, how few pitchers were actually pitching that many innings just last year? I mean, the Rangers had, you know, one guy pitch over 150 innings, I think. Yeah, only one guy, Jordan Lyles. Mike Foltynewicz was the Rangers' second innings leader last season in 139. Can you remember who was number three in most innings pitched for the Texas Rangers in 2021? Because I couldn't until I went back and looked at this. You give up? It's Colby Allard. He threw 124 innings. He only started 17 games. That's how badly it hit these pitchers. You know, even though they were given a normal on-ramp into the season, even though they were given a normal spring training, same lead-up, but none of them had the workload. They took that year off-ish, and it wasn't the same amount of workload. So their body, you know, building back up to that workload was difficult. And that's why not a whole lot of pitchers pitched that much. I believe the 180 innings was top five in at least the American League, if not all of Major League Baseball, from Jordan Lyles this past season. And even you look at this year and the innings leaders, there were just not a whole lot of pitchers who threw all that many innings. I mean, we did see Sandy Alcantara pitch 220 something innings. That was a real rarity. Did not happen with any other pitchers, really. I mean, that wouldn't have been that uncommon in something like 2018, 2017, just pre-pandemic, before things started getting super, super weird. But that is why I think he has been hurt the last couple of years. And then this year, there was the shortened spring training. You had basically a month because of that stupid lockout. And granted, pitchers could be doing their side work and things of that nature, but there is no substitute for facing live hitting in a spring training scenario. That ramp up is important. The months that it usually takes, there's a reason why pitchers and catchers are always the first to report, because those pitchers need a long, long time of, you know, gearing up and trying to, you know, get their arms healthy. Yeah, there weren't even 10 pitchers. Finally got it to load. There weren't even 10 pitchers this year who threw 200 innings. There was Shane Bieber was eighth at 200 innings exactly. Then Alec Manoah at 196 and two thirds, and Martin Perez just one shy of him at 196 and one third was the 10th place in innings pitched in all of Major League Baseball this year. There's only one pitcher that threw more than 205 innings, and that was Sandy Alcantara at 228 and two thirds, because he was just absolutely freaking dealing every time out there. And Aaron Nola was in second at 205. So there were not a whole lot of guys who were throwing this many innings, making all 32 starts and going deep into the game in all of those starts. That is not something that has happened a whole lot the last 2 years. I think that it'll probably get more, you know, it'll go kind of more back to normal in 2023, because there is no lockout, there is not going to be a shortened spring training. Pitchers will be able to do their normal routines, will be able to use team facilities during the off season, and I think there'll be a whole lot more than eight pitchers who throw more than 200 innings next year. I could be wrong, but I think it's going to start to go back to normal. But again, I think those two factors had some real effects on more pitchers getting hurt, and specifically Jacob DeGrom getting hurt. He has shown a history of being healthy, and despite that, what he calls a weird injury, I think it was pretty normal and shouldn't be as certain that he is going to break down in his age 35 season next year, as everyone is just 100% crystal clear on. But let's look at a few other things that happened this week that have passed under the radar. The Rule 5 draft happened. The Rangers did not make a selection because their 40-man roster is pretty much set, as is their Major League roster. There's not a whole lot of guys on there that they are thinking, all right, this guy can help our team for sure right now. But they did lose a player to the Major League Rule 5 draft. They lost a few in the minor league, but the one they lost in the Major League Rule 5 draft was a guy who I was worried about them not protecting on their 40-man roster. That is right-handed pitcher Mason Ingorf. They lost him to the Tigers. So in case you don't remember how the Rule 5 draft works, basically guys who have been in the minor leagues long enough and aren't on your 40-man roster can be taken by another team, but those players have to be on the active Major League roster for the entire season, barring an injury, or the team has to send them back to the team they drafted them from, and no harm, no foul. They just go back right into that system. Mason Ingler had a really, really good year. He was a fourth round pick out of Forney in the 2018 draft. He was one who was a victim of the classic deload program. There were a lot of Rangers pitchers who missed a lot of time. He didn't pitch professionally until 2021. That's how badly the D load hit him. He had, I believe, Tommy John surgery, didn't pitch in 2018, then missed 2019, and obviously 2020, there was no minor league season, so he had to wait until 2021 as a 21-year-old, 3 years after he was drafted, to make his professional debut. Was really, really solid this year, made it all the way up to Frisco, was basically one of the keys in their rotation that helped them win a Texas League championship. I was a little surprised that he got picked in this draft. He was definitely always going to be a risk, kind of a projectable guy, 6'4", 206, just a four-pitch kind of as type of participation on the Rangers on Deck pod pointed out. He said he pitches like a 30-year-old, and that kind of nails him. He's got four pitches, trying to mix speeds, trying to use pitchability. It's a darn shame, but I think it's going to be a great opportunity for him. That Tigers team has a lot of room to grow from where they were this year. I think there's definitely space for him, and I think he could end up being a pretty decent back end of the rotation pitcher. I think he is still a little young to go and make his major league debut, or a little, I should say, inexperienced. He is 23 now. He turned 23 in November, but I don't know. I think the Rangers could end up getting him back, and he could probably slot in to the back end of a rotation. But congrats to Mason Englert for getting picked. I think that's a good pick by the Tigers. Darn shame. But the player that I am most surprised made it through this draft is a player who the Rangers got in the Matt Busch trade. That is Antoine Kelly. He is a left-handed pitcher who was in Frisco this year. The Rangers, I was really surprised they left him off their 40-man roster. He's a guy who I thought was a surefire Rule 5 pick because he has got some really, really nasty stuff. The fastball is in the upper 90s. The breaking stuff is really nasty. He doesn't really know where it's going. It's got a slider and a changeup, both of which are pretty darn good. Slider is just a little bit better, but has no idea where it's going. A guy like that could definitely sit in your bullpen, be usable on a major league roster, and I think the Rangers are pretty happy that they didn't lose him. He apparently was probably the second piece to Mark Mathias in that trade, which is not how people viewed it at the time, but glad that Antoine Kelly made it through that draft. The Rangers didn't have anybody else on that they lost in the Major League Rule 5, and they had some really, really tough decisions to make before that draft, so I'm glad they only lost one. I'm thinking Mason Englert might end up coming back, but a good, good opportunity for him. But that is probably going to do it for this week's editions of Locked On Rangers. Unless the Rangers, you know, make a trade or sign some left fielder or some significant news, I am not going to have an episode tomorrow. You've had your five this week. Be grateful, and I'll be back on Monday. Thank you all so much for listening and subscribing this week. Been the biggest week, I think, in Locked On Rangers history. Really, really appreciate all the support. Thanks y'all so much for listening and subscribing. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.